As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, we were looking at Genesis chapter 31. We had noted that Jacob had spent how long with Laban? 20 years. So remember the 14 for his two brides, and then an extra 6 years for the service of the sheep. God had blessed Laban, had blessed Laban through Jacob, and then after in the 14 years he'd blessed him, and then in the following 6 years God sent his blessings on directly to Jacob, and so Jacob has a huge family. He has not only his wives and their servants, and then all the children, all the boys, and then, of course, Dinah as well. But all the servants he's accumulated, and then the wealth of all the sheep he has. So he's moving along, and God has blessed him. And as you get into chapter 30 and then 31, he makes the decision it's time to go. A couple of reasons why. Number one, he notes that Laban and Laban's sons do not look at him the same way they used to. There seems to be some envy and jealousy between them. But even more importantly, God has told him to leave. And so now he set his course to leave. He, of course, in chapter 30, had talked to Leah and Rachel about leaving, and they agree. Do you remember what was one of the big motivating factors for Rachel and Leah agreeing? The money, and how their father had wasted their inheritance away. And so they do that. They decide to flee. Laban has left for a little while, so that gives Jacob a chance to go. And so he goes. And in the text we were looking at last week, you have Laban catching up to Jacob, and he begins to accuse him of what? What? Taking the idols and committing thievery. Now, there is no thievery that has occurred, with the exception of one thing, which Jacob has no knowledge of, which is what? The household god. It's also, I guess, the Hebrew is a theraphim. These were very important to families of that time. Now, they're attached to idolatry, so they're not good, but they were very important to their families. Do you remember what that idol held in particular? Why was it so important? This is the key question. Why was he is so insistent. You remember, what does he do? He goes and he searches all the tents. He's trying to look everywhere he can to find it. Yeah, sort of, yeah. It gives you ownership to the inheritance. Remember, that's the thing that Laban had wasted away for the young ladies. And so by holding on to this or having this, it gave them some right to Laban's inheritance. All right, so that's kind of where we are. Now, again, Rachel is taking it. She did. But Jacob doesn't know that. Now, as we ended class last week, we noted that, where is it? She's basically sitting on it. It's inside that palanquin that she's sitting on. And there's a reason there she gives for why she's not getting up. And it seems to, that seems to be reason enough for Laban to not search it. So the situation kind of shifts. At first, Laban was very angry. Laban was the one accusing. Notice the change, verse 36. Then Jacob became angry and berated Laban. Jacob said to Laban, "What is my offense? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me?" And so he seems to just now unleash all this pent-up frustration he has for 20 years of hard labor and just being treated very poorly by Laban. And so he goes on, he talks about verse 38, these 20 years I've been with you, right? 20 years he served him. And he'll note a couple of things. He says, your ewes, verse 38, and your female goats have not miscarried. Right? And all that time he's been good at husbandry. I guess that's the older term for that. But he's been a good shepherd to them. He says, your ewes and your female have not miscarried. I have not eaten the rams of your flocks. Do you know what that maybe refers to? Part of the wages of being a shepherd, a hired-on shepherd, was that occasionally you could take a ram and eat it. Yet what is Jacob saying? I didn't even take that. I had right to it, but I never even took one of your rams. The implication is I ate of my own food. So that was a... That was something really Laban owed him, but Laban hadn't paid. He goes on, he says, what was torn by wild beast I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. From my hand you required it, whether stolen day by day or night. Now that's probably not something very familiar to us, but to understand their culture was when you're a hired shepherd, you had responsibility of the sheep when? During the daylight hours. During the daylight hours. You were not held responsible for sheep that would be taken by night by wolves. Because that was seen as, what can you do? It's dark. It's very hard. And so the first thing he notes, that wild beasts, when they would tear them, eat these sheep, what would happen? Yeah, he'd take his own flock and he would replace it. And he said that was required. Now, if it happened in daylight hours, Laban had every right to require it because that was his job. But at nighttime, he didn't have that. And yet, Jacob says, even if it occurred at nighttime when I'm not legally required to, I went ahead and replaced it. I bore the loss. This is really a pertinent time for this when you're doing taxes, right? And you're trying to figure out the gains and losses and all that. And so he's saying, I took loss here. Not only did you not pay me the full required amount by the rams, but also I suffered loss because of it. He says, verse 40, there I was, you know, in the day, in the heat, and at night, in the cold. He said that sleep had fled from his eyes. And so he had suffered all this difficulty in serving him for 20 years. Now, despite his honest service, what was the response of Laban? Verse 42. Verse 41. What was the response of Laban to all of his hard work? He changed his wages 10 times. 10 times you've changed my wages. Now again, is that a literal 10 times or is he speaking figuratively? It's probably figuratively, but I don't know. Maybe it wasn't exact 10 times. But most likely it's a figure of speech. But he's saying, Laban, over and over again, you have been dishonest with me. Now, we saw that, didn't we? We saw it in the text. Do you remember what the example was? Sheep. The sheep. What about the sheep? Speckled. And what did Laban keep doing?
First it called good and no speckled. And when God made everybody speckled, he wanted all the speckled.
Yeah, so remember it was anything that was black, speckled, or striped. Those are supposed to be Jacob's, but Laban would change it. And he'd say, no, it's just the speckled, or no, it's just the stripes. And he kept trying to change the deal up. Go back earlier. What was the original deal? Is it for Rachel in particular? And he tricked him there. And so it's been over and over again. Laban has dealt dishonestly. And then you get to the end here. Verse 42. If, conditional statement, if the God of my father, I want to note something, sidebar, step over here for just a second. Notice how he's talking about God. How is he speaking about him? If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and fear of Isaac, well, what's he doing there? Catch it? He's removing. He's talking about the relationship God had with his father and grandfather, not himself. I just want you to see, this is going to change over time, but as of right now, he's speaking of God how? As being separated from him. Maybe. I'll think about it. I guess in my mind right now, I'll keep contemplating it. But in my mind, at least, he's speaking kind of God abstractly. Now, but and one of the reasons I say that is because it'll change as he goes forward. As he grows spiritually, I think you see that change occur. But just notice that as kind of a sidebar. So he says, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac, that's just another way of saying the God Isaac feared, had not been on my side, surely now you would have what? Sent me away empty-handed. But notice, God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. You remember earlier Laban tried to claim, I could do harm to you, but I'm not going to because God said, your God said, don't do your harm. What's Jacob saying? You're not doing me harm because my God told you not to. He rebuked you. Verse 43. So Laban, still trying to save face. He says, the daughters are my daughters. The children are my children. The flocks are my flocks. And all that you see is mine. Is that true? He's still trying to take back all the hard work that Jacob had done and claim it as his own. He has no right to claim of any of that. Those are Jacob's, given to him by God. And so Laban then says, but what can I do this day for these daughters, my daughters again, or for their children whom they have borne? So he really can't go anywhere. I think he's really just trying to save face. He says, verse 44, let's make a covenant. What's a covenant? An agreement between two parties. And so they do that. And he says, let it be a witness between you and me. The accusation that he's still trying to make is between you and me. So he's looking for protection from Jacob, it seems like to me. But Jacob decides to do that. They set up this stone pillar as a marker that neither one would come beyond it in any kind of ill way. And so it would stand as a reminder of that. Laban calls it... I'm not even going to try. I've tried to get that. That gets my tongue all tangled up. But what it simply means is witness, right? That's the ideal. God as witness, literally it's the heap of witness. And then Jacob calls it Galeed, which is So the Jagar, rest of it, that's Aramaic, which being an Armenian makes sense that Laban speaks Armenian. Galid is the Hebrew, and it means the same thing, heap of witness. And so it becomes known as Galid, this heap of witness between us. They named the place what? Mizpah. And it means watch post. Kind of the same idea here. Watch post. I don't have that there on the map. I just had a more. But, you know, it's just going to be just south of that area. Padan Aram, south of there. So anyway, they do this. They eat a meal together. That was common when you would make a covenant that you would eat a meal together. And that really kind of is the end of that. Any questions about 31? Let's go to chapter 32. Not verse 32, but chapter 32. Jacob then goes on. So Jacob goes from one difficult situation to what he thinks is going to be another very difficult situation. Now, sometimes expectations aren't born on reality, right? But he doesn't know what's going to come later. And so he's returning home, and of course, he's going to meet who? His brother. What was the temperature of the room when he left? Very high. You remember what what Esau said to Jacob? When dad dies, I'm killing you. That's basically what he said to him. Right? And so he did not leave it in a good way. However, we have two very fascinating kind of, again, sidebars in the text. The first one occurs in verse 1 and 2. So he went on his way, and what? The angels of God met him. There's so much speculation that maybe goes through our mind with not a lot of great answers here, at least as to the fullest picture. How did he know they're angels? Did he know they were angels? What's going on here? Well, he must have. Notice the name of the... notice his response in verse 2. He looks across at the angels, and what does he say? This is God's camp, right? That's God's camp, and then we're going to camp over here. So that place became Mahananim. And it means two camps. What do you think all that? Why is this recorded? What's the import of this? Do you think? That's all we have, two verses. I don't know that it ever comes up again in Scripture. I don't know of another place where this particular event comes up again. Why is this here? Mm-hmm. Well, it's just the idea of you have two large groups, right? You have, you think about Abraham and Lot, right? When they were traveling, they had become so big, what did they have to do? They had to separate. They'd become so large. So I think what's kind of being spoken about here is the idea of these very two large camps here sitting side by side. But what do you think might be the symbolic meaning of what's going on here? Providence. God's providence. In particular, watching who? Jacob, right? Jacob, that God is with Jacob. Now, hopefully this will give him assurance as he goes on to meet Esau that God is there with him. And so whatever he's walking into, he has that promise. So you have that. Again, very short kind of ideal there. The name of that place comes up a few times. If you go to Joshua 21, 2 Samuel chapter 2, you'll read about this place where this occurred. So verse 3 brings us back into the context. So Jacob then sends messengers on to Esau in Seir. Seir is the area down here. You can see Edom on the map. That's the area where Seir would be. That would be become the settlement of Esau's family, which would later be known as Edom. It's to the southeast of Israel. What would be later the kingdom of Israel. And he says, now I want you to notice the language here as he's writing. This is Jacob sending a message to Esau, verse 4. He says, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau." Notice that. My lord Esau. Notice that's lower L. That's important. It's not the name of God. My lord Esau, thus your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. And then he goes on to talk more about it. But then again later he says, I've sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight. So what's he doing here? Yeah, he's trying to show some humility before he ever gets there. Now, it's really fascinating, from the prophecy given to Rebekah, who's ultimately going to be calling who Lord and who servant? Yeah, and the younger shall serve the older, right? However, here, he's trying to supplicate deal with any lasting anger to show Esau, you know, I'm not the same guy that left. And so he's pleading for favor. When the messengers returned to Jacob, this is Esau's response in verse 6. We came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you. All right, okay. Maybe that's a good thing, but then notice. And there are 400 men with him. Okay, now, if you're Jacob, how does that sound in your ears without any knowledge of what's going to happen in the future? We're going to battle here. And so Jacob then is going to do something interesting. He's going to divide his camp up. And we'll notice that he'll put them into two camps. Do you remember the reason why? Yeah, and he says at one point later on where, you know, if we are attacked, one can escape, right? And so one scholar noted that may have been kind of military tactics of the day, to divide your army up in order to protect at least a portion of it rather than to lose the whole thing. I don't know for sure, but he does decide to do it that way. And then we have another interesting interlude. If you go, so he starts sending them away, and you'll notice that he leaves the most precious possessions he has until the last. Who's the last group he sends away? His wife, his wives and his children, right? They're the last one. But then the end of verse 20 says, but he stayed back, right? He stayed by himself. Say tonight in the camp. And then you get to verse 22. The same night he arose and took two wives and two female servants and 11 children. Well, this is where he's sending them away. And crossed the ford of Jabbok. He took them and sent them across a stream and everything else that he had. Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the break of morning. Now, you want to get in an interesting debate, get some preachers talking about this text. Get some scholars discussing what's going on here. And it is kind of confusing. Although I think the answer to it is in the text. So who is Jacob wrestling? Number one, two grown men wrestling. I can tell you this for sure, Turner, I have no interest in wrestling with you, ever. Well, that's a good question. Yeah, so there's something going on beyond just the normal everyday thing, right? And so they wrestle, it says, until the break of day. They wrestled all night long. You got to do what you want to do, I guess. Yeah, you'd be pretty tired. But to show the relentlessness of Jacob, he continued to wrestle with this man. When the man, again, almost emphasizing that, saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Ouch. Right? That must have been painful. Yet despite that pain, he doesn't let go. And so the man says to Jacob, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Now, there's a lot of questions I have about this. I'm not going to get a lot of answers to. How did Jacob even know to ask to be blessed? Now, some have surmised that the guy just touched his hip and put it out of socket. Maybe he knew there's something more to this guy than what meets the eye. I don't know. But he asked, doesn't he? And so he asked for a blessing. And he gives him an interesting blessing. The man said to Jacob, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have," notice this, "you have striven with" who? "God and with men, and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." He's asking the guy's name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. Now again, we don't know what the blessing actually is. It never tells us. Is the blessing simply the name change? That doesn't seem to be right. But he was blessed. So, who is this guy? All right, a couple different ideas have been put forward. He calls the place, and this is real important. Jacob, verse 30, called the place what? Peniel, right? Peniel. Does anybody know what the literal translation of Peniel is in Hebrew? The face of who? The face of God. Saying, "For I have" what? "I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." That was God in the flesh, seems to be what Jacob is trying to say. To kind of back that up, go over, and we're going to leave Genesis for just a second. Go over to Hosea. Chapter 12. Hosea chapter 12. Whoops, let me do that. And let's read, somebody read real nice and loud, Hosea 12, 3 and 4.
"In the womb he took his brother by the heel."
Okay, pause just for a second. "In the womb he took his brother, heel." Who is that? Jacob, remember that's the name of Jacob. Okay, Lisa, keep going.
"And in his manhood, he strove with God."
He strove with God, or wrestled with God.
In his manhood.
Yes, and manhood is maturity, which would be the time we're in now with Jacob. So Hosea, the prophet, seems to agree with the idea that this is God, not just some angel, which forever I believed. I hadn't really studied the text. But it seems to at least be from Jacob's perspective, from the perspective of Hosea the prophet, that this is God. Isn't that kind of amazing? Now, still a lot of questions, and there'll be people who have debates, and I'll say like I always do. You study it. You continue to study it. You strive to understand better. But that at least seems to be the text there from Jacob's point of view, that he is actually striving with God.
And then the next verse says he strove
with the angel of Ramiel. Yeah, and again, remember, angel just literally means messenger of God, right? Which verse is that?
When we were at...
Hosea? No. You mean, back up here. Yeah, so the angel said to him in verse 28, I think is what you're talking about, that should no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men. Now, the way I take the men is he's looking backwards at Laban and Esau. That would be my take on that particular hint. The question. Good question, though. Yes, sir, Turner.
What really makes it confusing for me is that he's asked for a blessing. Mm-hmm. So that gives you some indication he knows who he is. Then he asks for his name, giving you some indication he doesn't know who he is.
Right.
And then, and then he calls the place what he called it, that he does know what it is. And so the back and forth. It's hard to nail down.
It is.
The same thing as if you didn't know that was God. When you have the courage to actually wrestle physically with God.
I'm going to ask the question that if this says he's naming it the place of God, right? Couldn't that be, if it was an angel is a representative of God.
And that's what some people will posit, that this is an angel. And this is why some people come to that conclusion. There's another thing too, right? You can't, no man can see God to in his face and live. Yet we do see Jesus, who is God, and many people saw him and lived. Right? And so, I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know the answer to it. I think it's fascinating. He's definitely a representative of God in some way, if it isn't God. So it's either God or one of his representatives, angels, some other spirit being, or... Yeah, so that would be my answer to that. Well, this is called, that's why this is called a man, right? So this is if it is God, it's God in flesh. Jody.
He wrestled with man in that he wrestled with Laban, and he conducted himself honorably all those 20 years. He did not defraud Laban. Anything, but then when he comes to God and the wrestling with God, it reminds me of the prophet that told the king, and I can't even remember which one now. He said, "Strike the ground," and he struck three times, and the prophet got mad.
Oh,
why did you stop at three?
Yes, go ahead. I think it was Jehoshaphat or Jehoshaphat's son.
God here is testing him to see his determination and focus on not letting go of his spiritual mindedness. And he said, "You've been resting all night. Yes, let me go. I'd be inclined to let it go."
Well, and there, it says something to me too about that God's desire for us to strive for his blessings, right? To show that tenacity. Go to the... if you go to the widow with the two mites, right? She gives it all to God. You go to the parable of the older woman, the widow who went to the judge and persistently kept going to him until finally she got justice. And what was the point of that from Jesus' perspective? When you pray, pray that way, right? Pray persistently. If it's really something that's important, you shouldn't pray one time and just ask God to intervene. You should be persistent. And here again, it is Israel's, Jacob's, persistence that gives him the blessing. What if he lets go after he touches his socket? The man, whoever that is, leaves probably. But he would not relent. And I think that's something for us in our faith, right? Isn't that the lesson? You're going to have difficult times. Sometimes it's going to be painful. Sometimes you're going to fall on your face. But be persistent. Get back up. Keep striving forward. Keep holding on to your faith. Don't let it go. That's the faith that will be rewarded. Paul wrote to Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 4, I have fought the good fight. I have what? Finished my race. I have kept the course. Or what's Paul's point? I'm not giving up.
And he never said that when he fought the good fight, he went off that. Mm-mm. You know, you kept fighting. That's the truth.
That's the key. Keep fighting. Don't give up. Keep searching. And so his persistence pays off. He is blessed. Again, this text doesn't really say what the blessing is. But one thing God does is he changes his name to Israel. Now, you probably know this already, but what does Israel mean? He strives or wrestles with God. And that really is emblematic of Jacob, isn't it? And names with God are so vitally important. Names are often prophetic. Esau, Edom, right? Jacob, heel grabber. Israel, wrestles with God. Not only is this a name change for a person, but it is for a nation. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. And today, who is Israel? We are. We're the spiritual Israel. And many of us, all of us, at times are wrestling with God. We're striving. I think I love that text. I don't have a lot of answers, but it is fascinating.
Side was just working for wives and property. Now he's going to be shifting totally into a whole different sphere.
Yes, and it is pivotal for that. It does change. Now he's not, we're going to have some difficult times with him at times. Not as much, but there are going to be a couple of things where you're going to scratch your head and say, why did he do that? But I do think this is a moment, like I was pointing out before, he's saying, the God of my father, the God of my grandfather. Well, that'll start to change when he takes ownership of his faith. There's more I'll say about that, but it's something we want our kids to do, right? As they're growing up, we're teaching them about God, but hopefully one day they don't look at it as, I go to my mom's church or my dad's church. I go to my church, right? I'm a part of the church. They take ownership of that. One last little kind of interesting note, and we'll close. He says, therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket. That would be part of their regulations of something they wouldn't do when they were eating. They wouldn't eat that particular part. I have to be careful calling muscle groups out because I could get it wrong very easily. But um, I believe that's the sciatic muscle. Is that right? Does that sound right? Lisa, do you know that muscle group? Yeah.
The joint that connects the pelvis with the femur.
So would that be right? Sciatic muscle? I don't know. That's just, I won't lay claim to it in case I'm wrong. No, I'm talking about the muscle that was affected there. What now?
You were saying that they said not to eat the sinew of the animal
because yeah, but yeah, but it was referring to Jacob's sinew, right? It doesn't really matter. I don't want to get off on that. Whatever you call that muscle, that was something that the Jews would not eat, kind of reflecting back on this. It became a memorial for them, a way to remember the time that Jacob wrestled with God. Any other thoughts or comments before we move to our next thing? All right, so not next week, but 2 weeks, we're going to come back to chapter 33, and we're going to look at Jacob actually meeting Esau, and then get into 34 when we get into the trouble with Dinah, and what happened to her, and what the brothers did to the men of that town. Not the most pleasant discussion, but we'll talk about it. Any other thoughts, comments? Good discussion. We'll go ahead and dismiss this time. But before